Translation by Srila Prabhupada. At the end of every four yugas, the great saintly persons, upon seeing that the eternal occupational duties of mankind have been misused, re-establish the principles of religion. Please repeat. At the end of every four yugas, the great saintly persons, upon seeing that the eternal occupational duties of mankind have been misused, re-establish the principles of religion. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. In this verse, the words dharma and sanatana are very important. Sanatan means eternal, and dharma means occupational duties. From Satya Yuga to Kali Yuga, the principles of religion and occupational duty gradually deteriorate. In Satya Yuga, the religious principles are observed in full, without deviation. In Treta Yuga, however, these principles are somewhat neglected, and only three-fourths of the religious duties continue. In Dwapara Yuga, only half of the religious principles continue, and in Kali Yuga, only one-fourth of the religious principles, which gradually disappear. At the end of Kali Yuga, the principles of religion, or the occupational duties of humanity, are almost lost. Indeed, in this Kali Yuga, we have passed through only 5,000 years, yet the decline of Sanatana Dharma is very prominent. The duty of saintly persons, therefore, is to take up seriously the cause of Sanatana Dharma and try to re-establish it for the benefit of the entire human society. The Krishna consciousness movement has been started according to this principle. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 12.3.51, Kaler dosa nidhe rajan asti hyeko mahan guna kirtana deva krishnasya mukta sanga param brajet. I'm just going to read the translation of that, because Prabhupada doesn't give a translation in this purport. My dear King, although Kali Yuga is an ocean of faults, there is still one good quality about this age. Simply by chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, one can become free from material bondage and be promoted to the transcendental kingdom. The entire Kali Yuga is full of faults. It is like an unlimited ocean of faults. But the Krishna consciousness movement is very authorized. Therefore, following in the footsteps of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who 500 years ago, Shishi Radha Gokulananda Kijai, Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman Kijai, Shishi Gornatai Kijai, who 500 years ago inaugurated the movement of Sankirtan, Krishna Kirtan, we are trying to introduce this movement according to superior orders all over the world. Now, if the inaugurators of this movement strictly follow the regulated principles and spread this movement for the benefit of all human society, they will certainly usher in a new way of life by re-establishing Sanatana Dharma, the eternal occupational duties of humanity. The eternal occupational duty of the human being is to serve Krishna, Jivara Swarupahoy Krishnara Nityadas. This is the purport of Sanatana Dharma. Sanatana means Nitya, or eternal, and Krishna Das means servant of Krishna. The eternal occupational duty of the human being is to serve Krishna. This is the sum and substance of the Krishna consciousness movement. Om Ajnana Tamarandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Guru Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. At the end of every four yugas, the great saintly persons, upon seeing that the eternal occupational duties of mankind have been misused, re-establish the principles of religion. So, Sanatana Dharma, Yato Dharma Sanatanaha. Sanatana Dharma is the topic of this verse today. It's very relevant. Sanatana Dharma is something very relevant to devotees and transcendentalists. It's completely irrelevant to anybody who's not interested in devotional service. You know, there's no, you know, like in society in general, they don't care about, there's no interest in Sanatana Dharma. There's no interest in Dharma. There's no interest in what we should do, what we shouldn't do, all these type of things. We find ourselves, for whatever reason, we've been born in a society which essentially has been overrun by the economic-minded. So it's about money. at least in this area of the world, it's about money. So Prabhupada always explained that this demoniac mentality, you do anything to make a profit, do anything to make money. You don't care. Don't care about religious principles. Don't care about other people. You know, don't care about their own spiritual welfare. All it is just about money. And then anybody who lives here gets sucked into that trap. You know, it's like you jump in the ocean. You're bound to get wet. So you live in the Western world. You're bound to be harassed by people who are obsessed with money as a goal of life. So for those of us who are trying to break free from material world and go back home, back to Godhead, Sanatan Dharma is a very important topic to understand properly. What is Sanatan Dharma? So Prabhupada, the word Dharma, Prabhupada, I'm sure everybody's heard, he used to say it so often. He said, Dharma is mostly translated as religion, but religion means a kind of faith. According to the dictionary, religion means a kind of faith. But faith can be changed. So we find different religions in the world. And we find people taking shelter of different religions at different times. We find converts to different religions. So faith can be changed. But he said Dharma doesn't mean something that can be changed. At least Sanatan Dharma. Dharma means the essential quality of a thing. So he gave two examples usually, like sugar and salt. Sugar is sweet. The dharma of sugar is that it's sweet. If you taste something and it's not sweet, you know, so long as you're not ill with jaundice or whatever, then it should taste sweet. If it doesn't taste sweet, then it's not sugar. Similarly, salt should be salty. So dharma is the essential quality of a thing. Sanatan, according to Ramanujacharya, Sanatan means that thing which is without beginning or end. Transcendental to the influence of time, in other words. So in the material world, this thing, because we don't think very much about stuff in the material world, we just accept things and go along with the flow. But we're subject to time and space in the material world. But we don't have to be subject to time and space. Time and space are qualities of the material world. This body operates according to time and space. Like if you want to travel, so if you want to go to India, for example, there's a certain distance separating us and it takes a certain time to get there. So time and space. But Sanatan, according to Ramanujacharya, Sanatan means that thing which is not influenced by time. It's beyond the jurisdiction of time. There's no past, present and future. Now the closest, at least in my own upbringing in the, you know, Irish Catholic, you get taught eternal. You go back to heaven and then it's eternal. You live there forever, forever and ever, and everyone's really happy. So this idea needs to be kicked out. It needs to be rejected, this idea of eternality. That's not the eternality which is referred to in the Vedas. This idea that, like, we're here now, by doing certain practices, we go back home, back to Godhead. And when we get back home, back to Godhead, we stay there eternally, you know, which means forever and ever. Now, that's a wrong understanding. It leads to misunderstandings. Like, there was one, for example, there's a friend of mine. There's a book that Balabhadra Puri Maharaj wrote about his wife. And she, in that book, when she was passing away, she was explaining, she said she was having realizations of her svarup. And her svarup was, her eternal engagement was packing Krishna's lunchbox, I believe. That was the thing. So a friend of mine, he read that and he became completely disturbed because he was thinking, I have to go back to Godhead and spend the rest of eternity packing a lunchbox. You know, is it like, you know, I'd rather stay here, was his understanding. So this misunderstanding of when we hear about Krishna's pastimes, we have a misunderstanding that, well, we have to do the same thing eternally. But Ramanujacharya is saying that thing which is out without beginning or end, that thing which is transcendental to time is the eternal atmosphere. We have to, now the mind can't comprehend this. It's achintya. Avaktyoyam, achintyoyam, abhikaryoyam, uchate. It's achintya. Spiritual world is achintya, so there's no point trying to understand it with the mind and intelligence. It's something which needs to be entered into on the spiritual level, this sanatan. So this eternality, another example of what is eternal. is given in Jave Dharma, Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He says there's an argument between the Brahmanas and the Vaishnavas that there's Nitya Dharma and Naimittika Dharma. Naimittika Dharma means temporary duties. There's certain things we have to do temporarily. And Nitya Dharma means there's certain things we have to do eternally, all the time. So according to the Brahminical culture, Nitya Dharma means all the prayers and rituals and sacrifices that have to be offered. There's no excuses. You can't have any excuses. They have to be done all the time. So they say that's Nitya Dharma. It's eternal. It always has to be done. But the argument was given that that's not Nitya Dharma because that's only done while you have a Brahmana's body. While you're in a particular body, you have to act in a certain way. But in your next body, you may be a Shudra. So then your Nitya Dharma is no longer, what do they call it? Sandhya Bandhanam and all the different prayers and the different rituals and bathing. It's not Nitya Dharma because it's only for this body. If you'd get another body, a different type of body in your next life, so how can you call that Nitya Dharma? He calls it Naimittika Dharma, it's temporary Dharma. So this Sanatan Dharma is a thing that never changes because it's beyond time and space. It's not influenced by what body we have. It's not influenced by what place we live in. So it's hard to come up with an understanding of what it is materially. Because everywhere we go in the material world, there's certain things that have to be done at appropriate times and appropriate places. Like our duties change according to our body, according to our age, according to our environment, according to our circumstances. So what's that thing that never changes? That's the thing that we're hunting after. We're searching after something in Krishna consciousness. We're not just practicing a load of rituals. The purpose of practicing the rituals is to search after something. We're supposed to find something. So we're thinking we have to find something that we've lost. We've lost Krishna. We've lost the soul. We're trying to reestablish our relationship with Krishna. Now, the problem with it is that thing which we're looking for is not lost. That's the problem. We think we're looking for something which we've lost because we don't know Krishna, isn't it? We've forgotten Krishna. So we're trying to find Krishna. But that thing, well, that person, Krishna, is not lost. So because he's not lost, we're looking in the wrong place. Like, for example, a person's looking for their glasses. You know, they're looking everywhere for their glasses, in the kitchen, in the living room, in the car, where did I put them? Where did I put my glasses? I can't find them. Then eventually he comes across a person who can see clearly, who points out your glasses are on your head. They're here already, the whole time they've been here. I'm looking everywhere for this thing. Outside of myself, I'm looking everywhere. But the thing I'm looking for is right here all the time. But it takes somebody who's got clear vision to point that out. So, similarly, we're looking for Krishna. We can't find Krishna. We're looking everywhere to try and find where is Krishna. But it takes a person with clear vision, in other words, guru, satguru, someone who can actually see the truth. Tadvidi pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya upadekshanti tadgyanam gyaninas tatvadarshipi. Someone who's a tatvadarshi, someone who can actually see the thing, can point out where Krishna is. And when we find where Krishna is, that Krishna is here all the time. He's never been lost. So this is the problem. This is the problem we face. So that's Sanatana Dharma. This Sanatana Dharma is our eternal occupation, which we're trying to find, which actually hasn't been lost. In the Bhagavad Gita, in the introduction, Prabhupada says that he analyzes that Sanatana Dharma, the eternal quality which can never be separated from the living entity, is service. He analyzes in that way, service. So in the material world, everyone's serving someone else, a person serving their family, a person serving their boss in the office, serving their friends, serving society, serving community, serving their pets. Everybody's serving something. Now, when this is said to people that everybody's serving somebody or something, there's one voice of opposition which comes up. Like somebody who's generally someone who's married or someone who works in a job that they hate can see clearly that they have to do something. They have to do stuff they don't want to do. you know, because, well, you have to do it, you know. So you can see, well, obviously that's service, because I don't want to do it, so I have to do it. So I'm engaged in the service of someone else. They want me to do it, so I have to do it. But the bachelors will cry out, I'm not serving anybody. I'm just doing whatever I want. You know, in the modern world, this idea has come about quite a lot. That, you know, I'm doing what I want to do. I'm not serving. I'm, you know. So the answer is that so long as you don't realize who you are, you're serving something that you're not. Because you're serving the dictations of the mind. Whatever thoughts come in the mind, we have to chase after that. And we have to engage all our energy in serving the ideas of the mind. But when some clarity comes and we can see that actually I'm not my mind, I'm not my body, I'm not my mind, who am I as a soul? Then I see that actually I am running around in this world chasing, serving those things that I'm not, namely my mental desires. Krishna says in the second chapter, Prajahati yada kaman sarvan parta manogatan atman yevat mana tushta stita pragyata dochate. He says that a self-realized person, he gives up all desires which are derived from mental concoction. Prajahati yada kaman. Kaman means desires. Prajahati yada kaman. Sarvan parta manogatan. Manogatan means born of the mind. Any desire which is born of the mind is rejected by a self-realized soul. Atman yevatmana tushta. And he's situated in self-realization. He's situated in relationship with Krishna, in relationship with his own self. So, that's anatman dharma. It means service. Now, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, in chapter 4, verse 8, Purichanaya sadhanam vinashaya chaduskritam dharma samstapanartaya sambhavami yuge yuge. That to deliver the pious, to annihilate the miscreants, as well as to re-establish the principles of religion, I descend millennium after millennium. So he says there's three reasons Krishna says that he comes. One is to kill the demons, annihilate the miscreants. Then to protect the devotees and to re-establish dharma. These are the three reasons that Krishna comes. Krishna appears in this world. Now, Prabhupada says that to kill the demons, Krishna doesn't have to come to kill the demons. He can just cause a natural disaster or wars, pestilence, famine, whatever. He can kill millions of people, you know, indirectly by his external energy. So he doesn't have to come personally to kill the demons. And in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's also something interesting. It's said that Krishna actually, when Krishna comes, Krishna doesn't kill the demons. He doesn't kill the demons. The scriptures proclaim that Lord Krishna previously descended to take away the burden of the earth. This is Adilila, chapter 4. To take away this burden, however, is not the work of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The maintainer, Lord Vishnu, is the one who protects this universe. But the time to lift the burden of the world mixed with the time for Lord Krishna's incarnation. When the complete Supreme Personality of Godhead descends, all other incarnations of the Lord meet together within him. Lord Narayan, the four primary expansions, Vasudev, Sankarshan, Prajumna, and Aniruddha, Matsya, and the other Leela incarnations, the Yuga avatars, the Manvantar incarnations, and as many other incarnations as there are, all descend in the body of Lord Krishna. In this way, the complete Supreme Godhead, Lord Krishna himself, appears. At that time, therefore, Lord Vishnu is present in the body of Lord Krishna, and Lord Krishna kills the demons through him. So when Krishna says, Paritranaya sadhanam vinashaya chaduskritam, he's not killing the demons. Lord Vishnu is killing the demons, actually. Krishna doesn't have to come here to kill the demons. Then he says, dharma samstapanartaya, to re-establish dharma. He comes to re-establish dharma. But this verse here says, tapasa rishayo pasyan yato dharma sanatanaha, that the sages, the rishis, upon seeing that the eternal occupational duties of mankind have been misused, they re-establish the principles of religion. So, Paritranaya sadhanam vinashaya chaduskritam. Krishna doesn't come to kill the demons. Dharma samstapanartaya. He also doesn't come to re-establish religion, because the rishis re-establish religion, according to today's verse. So why does Krishna appear? Why does Krishna appear is an interesting question to ask, I think. And the answer is an interesting answer, I think. But you never know, because I might just be completely boring. It might be not interesting at all. But why Krishna appears is further explained. It says, thus the killing of the demons is but secondary work. I shall now speak of the main reason for the Lord's incarnation. The Lord's desire to appear was born from two reasons. Now this is Lord Krishna, not Lord Chaitanya. Adilila chapter 4 is describing the appearance of Lord Krishna. The Lord's desire to appear was born from two reasons. The Lord wanted to taste the sweet essence of the mellows of love of God, and he wanted to propagate devotional service in the world on the platform of spontaneous attraction. Thus he is known as supremely jubilant and as the most merciful of all. Raga Marga Bhakti Loke Karite Pracharana. Raga Marga. He wanted to taste devotional service. Now he's tasting devotional service anyway in the spiritual world. So he wanted to propagate Raga Marga, spontaneous devotional service. Now, obviously, Raga Marga, you can't jump to spontaneous devotional service. You have to go through Vaidya Sadhana Bhakti. But while engaging in Vaidya Sadhana Bhakti, we should know that Krishna does not come to give us a whole lot of rules and regulations, you know, of Vaidya Sadhana. Krishna comes because he wants to taste relationship with each individual. He wants us all to be situated on the platform of Raga Marga. That's the whole point. What's the point in the Supreme Personality of Godhead coming to this place just to give rules and regulations? Because he said, Paritranaya Sadhana Vidnashaya Chuduskritam Dharma Samstapanartaya Sambhavami Yuge Yuge. But there's no point for him to come to kill the demons, because Lord Vishnu can kill the demons. And even Durga Devi kills the demons all the time. We're all being killed again and again and again. Krishna doesn't have to come to do that. He doesn't have to come to re-establish Dharma, because the rishis come and they can re-establish Dharma. There's empowered personalities who come. So why does the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself personally come? So when it says Paritranaya Sadhunam, to protect the devotees, you can say he comes to protect the devotees. So we see like Prahlad Maharaj's case, where he came to stop Hiranyakashipu from killing him. I mean, is that it? To protect him from death? But Krishna can protect us from death in the same way that he kills the demons. He can do it through his external energy, or he can do it through his incarnations. He doesn't have to personally come to Paritranaya Sadhunam to protect the devotees. So Paritranaya Sadhunam means he comes because he wants to taste. He wants us to be in relationship with him on the spontaneous platform. That's the whole point. So he goes on then to explain the pastimes. He's going to come and he's going to exhibit his pastimes in Vrindavan with the gopis and the cowherd boys in Vrindavan. And then he says, then, by hearing about the pure love of the residents of Braj, devotees will worship me on the path of spontaneous love, abandoning all rituals of religiosity and fruit of activity. So again, the same point is made, that Krishna comes to, to establish Raga Marga. That's why he comes. So, Paritranaya Sadhunam Vinashaya Chaduskritam Dharma Samstapanartaya. So Krishna says to re-establish Dharma. Now, later on in the Bhagavad Gita, he says, Sarva Dharman Paritya Ja Mame Kam Sharanam Vraja Aham Tvam Sarva Papa Bhyo Moksha Yishyami Masuchaha. The same point again. He's already said he comes to re-establish Dharma. And then his final instruction, Sarva Dharman Paritya Ja, give up all Dharma. So it seems like a contradiction there. And as we study the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, we find that the whole thing is a contradiction. Everything in the Shastra is a contradiction to us. So we have to ask the question, we have to try and resolve the contradictions. There's no point just reading the book and saying, blah, 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 yeah, and then we memorize a few verses, and then we can just like quote the verses to smash our opponents. You know, there's no point in that. The point is, we're supposed to be developing in Krishna consciousness. We're supposed to be coming to a point of clarity, coming to a point of spiritual realization. You know, it's not just a novel. So if Krishna is saying he's coming to reestablish Dharma, and then he's saying reject Dharma, everything that Krishna says is truth. So if it appears contradictory, it means that there's a discrepancy in our understanding. That's the evidence. That's how we should see it. There's something wrong with my understanding. So we have to come to a higher understanding to try and grasp what it is that Krishna is saying. So Krishna says reestablish Dharma. Then he says give up Dharma and surrender to me. So both things have to be true. So what Dharma is he trying to reestablish? The point is that the Dharma that he's trying to reestablish is surrender to him. That's the point. So give up all what we call Naimittika Dharma, temporary Dharma, and take to the eternal Dharma, which is surrender to Krishna. So the question then was, like, if we're trying to understand what is Sanatana Dharma. So to understand what is Sanatana Dharma, we're also trying to understand what does it mean to surrender to Krishna. Now, we have the standard answer, you know, externally it's easy to understand what does it mean to surrender to Krishna. We follow the rules and regulations, you know, we rise early, 10 Mangalarti, chant holy names, engage in service. There's so many rules, there's so many offenses to be avoided. We can cultivate the six principles of surrender, six principles of saranagati, humility, accepting things favorable to Krishna consciousness, rejecting things unfavorable to Krishna consciousness, accept Krishna as my maintainer. And then we keep practicing these things for our whole life, you know, whether times are good times or bad times, you know, matra sparsha sukonteya, sutoshna sukadukada. Whether we're happy or distressed, we keep practicing, we keep following the rules and regulations. And then after death, we go back home, back to Godhead. You know, that's it, isn't it? There's not much more to say. That's what we do. We have our rules. We have our way of dressing. We have our way of eating. We have our, you know, the different rituals that we perform. And then by doing it for the whole, our whole life, we go back home, back to Godhead. So, if that's it, then that's all there is to say about the subject. There's not more to say. But actually, there's a lot more to say because there's a lot of unanswered questions in there. There's a lot of unanswered questions. Like, for example, if we're following all these things, shouldn't we be feeling some symptoms of ecstasy, isn't it, at some point? Because we're hearing about all these symptoms of ecstasy that should be developing, spiritual ecstasy, not just like material happiness or happiness from the modes of goodness. So we should be feeling symptoms of ecstasy. And then we think, well, why is it that sometimes I'm up and sometimes I'm down? Sometimes I'm up and sometimes I'm down, isn't it? Because we see that in Krishna consciousness. Generally, we're up and down. Sometimes we're enthusiastic. Sometimes we just can't be bothered. Sometimes we love it. Sometimes we hate it. You know, sometimes it's the only thing we want to do. Sometimes we've forgotten all about it. So why is it that we're going up and down all the time? So you can ask the question, you know, like people say, like, how do you know I'm advancing in Krishna consciousness? So the answer is, well, you know, surely don't you feel happy from practicing Krishna consciousness, isn't it? You know, like a hungry man, he knows that he's being satisfied with every bite of food, you know. So you think, okay, yeah, that's fair enough. I feel happy by practicing Krishna consciousness. So then you can say, okay, well, but sometimes I feel miserable as well, you know. I don't always, like, you know, maybe it's just me. But, you know, sometimes people feel happy, sometimes we feel miserable. So why do I feel miserable sometimes? And they say, you know, the answer to that, people say, well, yeah, you got to tolerate the ups and downs. So that's a non-answer, because there's two opposite answers, you know. Because you're saying, how do I know I'm advancing? Well, you're advancing because you're happy. You know, if you're happy, you're advancing. And yeah, but I sometimes feel miserable. And you say, well, that's part of advancement, you know. You feel happy and you feel miserable, but you got to keep going. You know, that's a non-answer. I don't know if that makes sense. On the one hand, the evidence that you're advancing is that you should be feeling happy. But then you say, well, sometimes I feel unhappy. Yeah, but that's also a part of advancing, is that sometimes you feel happy, sometimes you feel miserable. So, which is it, you know? Which is it? You know, there's a contradiction in that. And then you see, like, there's so many devotees give up the practice. If it's all so straightforward, then why do people give up the practice of Krishna consciousness? And why do we get bored and fed up with following rules and regulations sometimes? You know, and where, essentially, like, where's the higher taste that we're always hearing about? Now, the problem is, you can say the answer is that we're practicing Krishna consciousness within the modes of nature. That's our problem. In Srimad Bhagavatam, Kapila Dev explains, you can, there's four ways to practice bhakti. There's pure bhakti, obviously, but then there's bhakti contaminated by mode of goodness, contaminated by the mode of passion, and contaminated by the mode of ignorance. And then there's unlimited combinations of those things. So if we're practicing Krishna consciousness on the platform of the modes of nature, then the modes of nature are always changing. Sometimes the mode of goodness is prominent. Sometimes the mode of passion is prominent, and sometimes the mode of ignorance is prominent. Rajas tamas chabi bhuya sattvam bhavati bharata. Raja sattvam tamascheva tamasattvam rajastata. Sometimes the mode of goodness becomes prominent, defeating the modes of passion and ignorance, O son of Bharat. Sometimes the mode of passion defeats goodness and ignorance, and at other times ignorance defeats goodness and passion. In this way there is always competition for supremacy. So the modes of nature are always changing. They're always changing. So when the mode of goodness comes, then the mode of goodness conditions a person to a sense of happiness and knowledge. So we think, oh, I'm feeling very spiritual today, you know, because we're feeling so, you know, there's clarity in my mind, I feel happy, you know, I'm going to do this for the rest of my life, you know, I'm going to be fixed like this for the rest of my life. But the truth is, you're not going to be fixed like that for the rest of your life, you're going to be fixed like that till tomorrow maybe, you know, and then you're just going to go, right, you know what I mean, and all the mode of ignorance will come back. Mode of ignorance conditions a person to agyan, moroseness, depression, hatred. You know, and then next day, mode of passion conditions one to excessive fruitive activity. We're like busy, like anything, can't sit still. Next day, you know, maybe the mode of goodness comes back and we get the clarity again and think, oh, whew, yeah, I don't want to do that again. I'm going to be fixed here for the rest of my life. You know, but it doesn't work like that. So Krishna says the solution to it, you know, we can do it if we want to. We can continue eternally, life after life, practicing Krishna consciousness within the modes of nature. And we might get some relief sometimes, and then we have to suffer the distress. But like, what's the difference between our distress, you know, between the distress of a sadhaka and the distress of someone who's just a materialistic person? What's the difference? Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokul Nanda Ki Jai, Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman Ki Jai, Shri Shri Gornatai Ki Jai. So we say, oh, purification, we call it, you know, devotees get purified. It's like the standard excuse that's given for, you know what I mean, whenever anyone has a problem, oh, you're getting purified. Okay, I'm getting purified. I keep doing it, you know, years later, still getting purified. Years and years later, still getting purified. Nothing's changed. And then you stop and think one day, and you think, okay, all this purification that's going on. Krishna says, sukha dukkha. There's two things here. There's happiness and distress. So my purification, it feels a bit like dukkha, to be honest with you, you know. So what's the difference between me and being here suffering and being out there suffering? If suffering is suffering, I came here to be relieved from my suffering. I came here for self-realization, because it's like, you could say, if something's advertised, it was advertised eternity, bliss and knowledge, Satchit Ananda. It wasn't advertised sukha dukkha, but chant Hare Krishna as well. You know, you don't attract people in by saying, you know, you're experiencing happiness and distress in the material world. Come here, chant Hare Krishna, and experience happiness and distress also. You know, you don't attract people in by that. You say, no, you're not the body. You have nothing to do with this happiness and distress. You've got nothing to do with this world. You're actually a soul. And as a soul, your eternal constitutional position is Sat Chit Ananda, eternity, knowledge and bliss. So we buy it, we buy into that, and we think, yeah, that sounds good, I'll have that, you know. And then we come, and then people leave. One of the reasons people leave is because they think, well, I'm being cheated here, because it was advertised Satchit Ananda, but all I've got is Sukha Dukkha, you know. And at least if I'm out in the material world, if I have Sukha Dukkha, at least I can get some money, you know, and I can enjoy myself. So what's the point being, you're stuck here being somebody's dog's body, basically? Oh, you just be a servant and experience sukha dukkha. Out there, you can be the master and experience sukha dukkha. So people think, well, what's the point? What am I doing here? And they go, you know? But the point is, we're not being cheated. The point is, we're not grasping the essential thing. So Krishna says, he discusses the modes of nature in the first 18 verses of chapter 14 of Bhagavad Gita. Then he says, Nanyam gunebhya kartaram yada drashtanu pashyati gunebhyascha parambeti madbhavam sodigachati. When one properly sees that in all activities no other performer is at work than these modes of nature, and he knows the Supreme Lord who is transcendental to all these modes, he attains my spiritual nature. Then gunaneta natitya trin dehi deha samudbhavam janma mrityu jara dukhar vimukto mritam ashnute. When the embodied being is able to transcend these three modes associated with the material body, he can become free from birth, death, old age and their distresses, and can enjoy nectar even in this life. Even in this life. Now nectar means amrita. Amrita is nectar. Now mrityu means death. So amrita means transcendental to death, deathlessness. So amrita means the soul. So the soul means sanatan dharma. So like that's what we're talking about, sanatan dharma. Sanatan dharma means the eternal activity of the soul. So the soul and its activity cannot be separated. So amrita means the soul, means our activities in Krishna consciousness, in pure Krishna consciousness, not our rules and regulations, but in the raga marg, in the spontaneous attraction. Now, spontaneous attraction has to be understood properly. Spontaneous, in the material world, we have spontaneous attraction to the sense objects, because the mind is always running towards the sense objects, isn't it? You know, there's a natural, everybody has their little thing that they like, or things that they like in the world, and the mind is constantly going to those things. Spontaneously. So we come to Krishna consciousness and we make the mistake that we think, oh, well, if my mind is running to those things spontaneously, then I'll try and make my mind run to Krishna spontaneously. So we think, Krishna, Krishna, and then we look at Krishna's form and we try and spontaneously be attracted to Krishna's form, spontaneously be attracted to Krishna's names, spontaneously attracted to Krishna's pastimes through the mind, you know, by thinking about it. But it doesn't work like that. It doesn't work like that. The mind is the shadow of this of the soul. The mind is following the soul. The condition of the soul is reflected through the mind. So the point is that spontaneous attraction is that thing that happens between the soul and Krishna. It's the soul's attraction to the Supreme. It's not the mind's attraction to the Supreme. You can try and make your mind attracted to the Supreme as long as you want, for as many million lives as you want. It's not going to be, because the mind is attracted to sense objects. Only when we make this distinction that I'm not the mind, the mind can do whatever it wants to do. I'm the soul, you know. And in sadhana bhakti, what we do is we try and drag the mind by force to Krishna. So by dragging it by force, the mind becomes purified, the intelligence becomes purified, the senses become purified. Purified means separation, like distilling. If you distill water, it becomes purified. So you get pure water out. You have dirty water. It goes through a distillation process, and then pure water comes out. So it means you've taken out the impurities. So the mind is supposed to become purified. Now the impurity, Prabhupada always says, whenever he talks about dirty things in the mind, he says the impurity is to think that I am this body. That's the impurity. So to take out that impurity means to take out this conception that I am this body. Take out the conception that I have anything to do with this world. There's nothing. This world is not us. Krishna says, Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvasaha ahankara vimudhatma kartaham iti manyate. Ahankar, because of ahankar, false ego, we have become vimudha. Mudha means an ass. And vi means multiply that by a million. Vimudha. You're like a million asses rolled up into one because of ahankar. This false ego turns us into a donkey. We're no better than donkeys in this world. We may have our dhotis and our tilak and our rituals, but inside, if this thing hasn't happened, then we're no better than a donkey. Is that the verse, one who identifies with the land of his birth as worshipable, his family relations as his kinsmen, is no better than a cow or an ass. So it's not that, oh, those people who are not following the process of sadhana bhakti, who think that the land of their birth is worshipable and their family are the kinsmen, they're like donkeys. No, it's like, even if you're a sadhaka, if you're thinking like this, then we're compared to an ass. Because of ahankar, it's false identification. This material world is just like, we're living in a television program. You know? Like, you take the example of you switch a movie on the TV, you get sucked into the movie. You forget your identification, that you're the one, like, monged out on the sofa, you know, looking at a movie. You know, you're in the movie, you know? Isn't it? You're in the movie. Obviously, if you stop and think about it for a moment, you say, well, I'm not in the movie. So everybody knows they're not in the movie. In the same way, if you stop and think about it for a minute, you can think, yeah, I'm not the body, you know? But when you see the movie, then you get sucked into it. So you're in the movie until you think about it. And then that thinking about it, that analysis, that sankhya it's called, takes you out of the movie and puts you in your constitutional position on the sofa. So in the same way, we're looking at the activities of this body, you know, and I'm thinking, I'm doing it. Kartaham iti manyate. I'm thinking, I'm doing it. But Krishna says, tattvavit tu mahabaho guna karma vibhagayoho. A tattvavit, one who knows the truth, he doesn't see it that way. He sees that this body is just acting according to the modes of nature. I'm just a witness. I'm just observing this body acting. You know? But because we're identifying with the body, then we're identifying with the good activities of the body. And we're thinking, oh yeah, I'm so brilliant. And then we're identifying with the bad activities of the body and we're thinking, oh, I'm so fallen. I'm fallen today. Yesterday I was great, but today I'm really bad. But the soul is eternally transcendental. Eternally transcendental to the body. So you may have different activities going on in the body, but unless we accept this point and dwell on this point to a great extent, that I'm not the body. Krishna said, he says the same thing in every chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, the same point, he's just banging the same point into our brains, that the only thing we have to do is realize that we're not this body, then everything becomes apparent. So when one properly sees that in all activities, no other performer is at work than these modes of nature. Nanyam gunebhya kartaram. Na means not. Anyam means other. Gunebhya kartaram. There's no other performer than these modes of nature. Yada drashta anupashyati. When the drashta sees properly, the drashta means the soul. When the soul sees properly that the mind is active, the intelligence is active, and the body is active, but he sees that he's transcendental to that, and he also understands Param, Krishna, the Supreme Lord, then he attains my spiritual nature, Krishna says. And then the next verse he says, that's available now. Prabhupada always said, trust no future, however pleasant. So I mentioned the point, it's like, we're thinking we follow the rules and regulations, and then we go back to Godhead. So I'm going to go back to Godhead after death, in the future. Prabhupada said, trust no future, however pleasant. Because Krishna says, in the chapter 14, text 20, you go back to Godhead now. Now, because Godhead, the spiritual world is the eternally existing abode. It's got nothing to do with time and space. That's why it's called Sanatan. That was the point that Ramanujacharya made. That which has neither beginning nor end is called Sanatan. So we don't go to the Sanatan abode at some point in the future. How is that possible? Because at some point in the future means time and space. Time is present. The Sanatana abode is transcendental to time and space. It's eternally existing. Krishna's pastimes are eternally existing in our heart right now. Our attention is directed outside to the world of the senses. But the point of sadhana bhakti is to try and reflect our attention back inside to Krishna's pastimes inside in our heart, which are happening eternally right now. So back home, back to Godhead means this moment. If you don't go back home, back to Godhead now, you won't go back home, back to Godhead in the future. Because the future is always something that's in the future. It's always something that's beyond your grasp. So when it happens, that when self-realization happens now. When we go back to Godhead happens now. Our relationship with Krishna is not something for the future, it's something that happens now. So, I'll just finish, I'll just read one thing. Because quite often,
when these points are discussed, like the difference between the soul and the body, there's a thing called Trigdrishya Vichara, Trigdrishya Vivekam, which means the seer and the seen. And Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur said that everything I have to say can be understood by proper comprehension of this truth, Trigdrishya Vivekam, everything. So Drik means the seer, and Drishya means the seen. So we're thinking that I'm the seer, this body and the mind is the seer. So the example of looking for the glasses, we're trying to find Krishna, we're trying to find the soul, trying to find Krishna. We'll never find Krishna because the thing that we're using to find Krishna with is the object which is seen. The thing, Krishna is the seer. And we can say the soul is the seer. In the Upanishads it's described that the soul is the seer. So we're trying to find the soul, self-realization, who am I, by looking around. But the problem is that who I am is the seer. This body is the seen. The body means the mind, the intelligence, the physical body. So unless we can come to the point of separating ourselves to become the witness, observing the intelligence working, observing the mind working, then we can't come to an understanding of the spiritual energy. Without coming to an understanding of spiritual energy, we can't serve Krishna in bhakti. Brahma-bhuta prasanatma nasochiti nakankshati sama-sarveshu bhuteshu madbhaktim lavate param. This para-bhakti comes on the Brahma-bhuta platform. Brahma-bhuta means aham brahmasmi, when I become the soul. So when I become the soul, then I can serve Krishna properly. So sometimes devotees find it, you know, just, I can't quite understand it. So the answer is given in the last verse of chapter 13. Chapter 13 deals with Chetra and Chetragya. It's another way of saying the soul and the body. So Prabhupada says, one who can see the constitution of the whole material manifestation as this combination of the soul and material elements, and can also see the situation of the Supreme Soul, becomes eligible for transfer to the spiritual world. Then he says, these things are meant for contemplation and for realization, and one shall have a complete understanding of this chapter with the help of the spiritual master. So these things are meant for contemplation and for realization. So we have to take the time to sit and contemplate these things. There's no point running around like a lunatic, you know, doing so much service all the time, service, that we haven't even got any time to contemplate Krishna's message. The whole point of the service is to clarify our minds enough so that the message of Krishna is going to come in. You know, like people sometimes say, oh, I'm not interested in all that, I just want to love Krishna, you know. So if you take it on such a straightforward level, I just want to love Krishna. Well, so if you want to love someone but you're not interested in what they have to say, it's not really love, is it? You know? At least most ladies, most wives, the thing they want is listen to me, you know? Listen to me, you know? I mean, men also. But, you know, we can say, you know, you say you love me, you don't even want to listen to me. So we're saying we're trying to love Krishna. Do we not care about what he has to say? No, I just want to serve Krishna. But serve Krishna by listening to Krishna also. We want to be in relationship with Krishna. You know, Krishna can do everything by his external energy anyway. He doesn't need us to do anything. Prabhupada used to say quite often that serving Krishna is for our benefit. We serve Krishna for our benefit because by serving Krishna we become purified. And when the mind becomes purified, then the message can go into the heart. And when the message goes into the heart, then love comes for Krishna. So we shouldn't be so busy all the time that we haven't got time to sit, you know, with Krishna, to contemplate what it is that Krishna is saying. You know, because this is service. Prabhupada is saying, like, to serve Prabhupada means to follow his instructions. So he's saying these things are meant for contemplation and for realization. It's an instruction, it's called smaranam. We should take the time to try and settle the mind down, allow the mind to calm down so that these things can become apparent. It's not something to be understood. There's no point in it going into the brain. It's supposed to generate internally. It's supposed to generate above internally so that we have a relationship with Krishna. So if we have a relationship with Krishna, then we don't want to go out and have sukha-dukha in the material world. Because there may be sukha-dukha here, in sadhana, there may be sometimes happiness and sometimes distress. But that sadhana, that happiness and distress has got nothing to do with me. That's the happiness and distress of the body and the mind. Who I am is the soul, and I'm in relationship with Satchitananda, Krishna. So, you don't leave. You know, that's the platform that we're striving for. It's that platform of taste, of actual relationship with Krishna. Then, how can you go, you know? So, I'll stop there. Any questions or comments?